Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloudonaut podcast. My name is Michael.
And my name is Andreas.
We are two brothers focusing on AWS. So as freelancers, we do a lot of technical coaching for our clients. So for example, we help them to get started with AWS when all the teams need to be get used to AWS. And we also do things like infrastructure bootstrapping, where we typically use our own open source collection of CloudFormation templates to make sure that infrastructure is created in a very quick way to get the team started where they want to add their own intelligence. Every other week, we discuss a topic related to AWS here in the podcast. And one of us prepares the topic, and the topic is not known to the other one. Today, I have no clue what we are going to talk about. So what's the topic of this podcast, Andreas?
Yeah, so today we talk about the AWS Global Accelerator, a networking service that aims to improve the network latency and also the availability of your application. One thing I want to mention before we start, so you will find all the links to the topics we discuss in the show notes to this episode, and there's also a blog post that is covering the same topic, so if you want to go over it again, that will help. Okay, so let's start. So what is the AWS Global Accelerator? So it's a service that was announced by AWS 1 year ago at reInvent. And so I thought it was about time to review this service and to dive a little bit deeper into how it works, into the use cases, and also to check if the marketing promises are, or what they mean in the real world. So that is why I took some time and reviewed the service. And today I want to talk about that.
Okay, great, Andreas. So I have to admit, I haven't used the Global Accelerator yet. So I basically have not a lot of practical knowledge about how it works. I know some of the theory, but I'm very interested in your review of the service, actually. So let's get started.
Yeah, okay. So how can you, what's the model behind Global Accelerator? So basically what you get with the Global Accelerator, it's a, as the name implies, it's a global service. So it's deployed among all regions worldwide. So it's not bound to one single region. It's a global service. And what you get is you basically get two static IP addresses when you create a global accelerator. And those two IP addresses are public IP addresses, and they are also Anycast IP addresses. So Michael, do you know what Anycast means?
So I think I know what it means. So maybe I can try to explain it and then you correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, do that.
So I think Anycast means that multiple machines can have the same IP address, and then the one closest to the router is chosen when a packet arrives at the router. So that's kind of my understanding of how it works.
Yes. So yeah, Anycast is one addressing method of the Internet Protocol IP. And what it means is, yeah, you have one entry point, and then that's a one-to-one-of-many association. So which means the routing protocol decides where to route your packet to. So you have one ingoing IP address, and then the protocol or the routing algorithm basically decides where to route your package. And that's one of the available addressing methods. The other one that is probably more popular is Unicast, where you have a one-to-one association. So there's, it's very clear that to this IP address, there is only one destination. And then there's Broadcast, which just sends the packages to all members in the network. And there's Multicast, where you send the packages to some of the nodes in the network, and Anycast is just it's a one-to-one relationship, but the end of the relationship can change based on an algorithm. So that's basically what Anycast is. So what does that mean? So what can you do with an Anycast IP address? So we get this public Anycast IP address from Global Accelerator, And then you can route this IP address to an internet-facing application load balancer, to an internal application load balancer, to an internet-facing network load balancer, to an Elastic IP address, or to an EC2 instance with or even without a public IP address. So that is the endpoints that you can use for the global accelerator. And important to note is we get two static Anycast IP addresses. So this is for high availability. So we have two IP addresses, but they do not change. So these are really static public IP addresses. So that is important. The global accelerator supports TCP or UDP. And the algorithm that is implemented in the global accelerator routes the incoming package to the closest region and also to the closest healthy region, because the global accelerator is also doing health checks on each endpoint. So the global accelerator provides us those two static IP addresses, and then we can define endpoints in one or even multiple regions, and per region we can even have one or multiple endpoints. So that's how the global accelerator works. So then the next question is, how do we make use of the global accelerator? So how does that work? What do we need to configure? What resources do we need to create? And it's actually quite simple. So the first thing you need to do is you create an accelerator. This is the resource on AWS that provisions two static Anycast IP addresses for you that then that you can then use to address your application running behind the global accelerator. Next, you create a listener for the protocol and the ports that the clients shall communicate with. And then you create endpoint groups for each region that you want to route traffic to. So let's say you want to deploy your infrastructure in US East 1 and in US Central 1, for example. Then you create two endpoint groups in each of these regions. And the last step you do is you add an endpoint, for example, to an application load balancer, to each of your endpoint groups. So that is how you wire everything together. So it's the accelerator, a listener, an endpoint group for each region, and then the actual endpoint that points to your resources.
Okay, so if I understand this correctly, then I basically start with a DNS entry that points to both of my Anycast IP addresses from the global accelerator. And then I have, if I'm doing multi-region deployments, I have like multiple endpoint groups, but for use cases where I only have a deployment in a single region, I have one endpoint group. And in this endpoint group, I, for example, add the application load balancer as an endpoint. And then if I resolve the DNS name, it points to one of the Anycast IP addresses. And so the client sends the traffic to my application load balancer this way. So this is how it works, correct?
Exactly. That's how it works. And the only thing that you can configure is you can also configure how much of the traffic you want to send to the different regions. And you then can also add a weight. If you use multiple endpoints per region, you can also then define a weight for how much traffic should be routed to which endpoint. So that is the only things that you can configure with Global Accelerator. So it's quite simple to use.
Okay, so I could also do something like this. So if I have like in a single region and I do a kind of green-blue deployment, I could have two endpoint groups and I can shift the traffic from one group to the other group?
Exactly. Yeah, you have two endpoints in your endpoint group and then you can shift the traffic. That's actually the thing. And as I mentioned, the global accelerator checks the health of all the endpoints and all the endpoint groups, so basically the regions, and traffic is only routed to healthy endpoints.
Okay, great. So I think we already talked about one use case. So what other use cases are possible, or what are the use cases that AWS has in mind when they design Global Accelerator?
Yeah. So you talked about a use case that you could call the blue-green deployment, or maybe also a canary deployment. So basically shift traffic between different infrastructures for testing and deployments. Yeah, so that is what you can do with configuring the weights for different endpoints. So that is one use case. I think the most obvious use case is a multi-region disaster recovery scenario. So you want to deploy your infrastructure to multiple regions, and you want to make sure that traffic is only routed to regions that are healthy. So that is another use case. And of course, also traffic is always routed to the region that is closest to the client, which also then improves latency. So if you do multi-region deployments, Global Accelerator is an interesting option for you. Maybe let's talk about what is the other option to build multi-region infrastructures. What is the other option to do to route the traffic to the different regions, Michael? What's the other option that we have?
So I think we can, I mean, we could use CloudFront, or we could also just go with Route 53. So not sure.
Yeah, so Route 53 is the other option. So with Route 53, we can actually build something very similar to what we can do with the Global Accelerator. So you can have health checks, you can have multiple endpoints in different regions, and then by resolving the DNS name, the client is routed to the correct endpoint. The problem with using DNS for disaster recovery is that the clients cache the DNS resolutions that they made. And also, not all clients and not all DNS servers do that properly. So there might be a small or even quite long delay until your client notices that there is a new endpoint for your application. So with Anycast, we don't have that limitation, because the public IP addresses, the Anycast IP addresses, stay the same. They don't change if you have to fail over to another region. So you can shift traffic to other regions quickly. So it's about 40 seconds that you can switch the whole traffic to another region, and all clients immediately do that. So that is the multi-region use case, and also multi-region for disaster recovery use case. Another use case is also if you need static public IP addresses, for example, because your clients are not able to resolve DNS names, or because you need some firewall configurations that rely on static IP addresses, that could also be a scenario where you use the AWS Global Accelerator. And of course, there's another use case, which is if you have a scenario where latency is very, very critical. For example, think about a trading application or gaming, then you can use Global Accelerator to decrease the latency from your client to your endpoint on AWS. And why is that possible? Because with the AWS Global Accelerator, the packages from the clients enter the AWS managed network with less hops, so with less latency, and you don't rely on the internet to route your packages to the destination.
Okay, can you go into details about this latency reduction? So is there any numbers published? What kind of speed up can I expect if I use one of those services that make sure that packages enter the AWS network sooner than later?
Yes. So that was exactly the question I had in mind. So because on the marketing page, AWS says, yes, you can use the Global Accelerator to decrease your latency. But then I ask myself, how much? So is it really worth considering? And that's why I did a latency benchmark. And let me talk about how I did this benchmark. So I used a tool from a company called PerfOps. What they do is, they do networking services for global infrastructures. And they provided me free credits to run a latency benchmark on their infrastructure. And basically what I could do with that is I could use more than 200 nodes distributed worldwide to measure the latency between those clients and AWS infrastructure, so the global accelerator, for example. So yeah, special thanks to PerfOps for providing this infrastructure for our tests. So how does the test setup look like? So I set up an application load balancer in EOVEST 1, which was used as the only endpoint. So in this scenario, I only wanted to measure the latency improvements that you can achieve by using the AWS Global Accelerator. So I only had one endpoint. It was not a multi-region setup. And the application load balancer itself responded with a static response without forwarding the request to any target. So there was no EC2 instance involved. The ALB just responded with a static response for just avoiding to measuring any latency on a web server behind the load balancer. And the benchmark measures the time to first byte. So that is, I'm sending an HTTP request and we are measuring how long does it take for the application load balancer to send the first byte back to the client. So that is the setup. And in short, you could say that the global accelerator delivers what it promises. So I measured the network latency from more than 200 nodes distributed worldwide. And the network latency of the global accelerator was 361 milliseconds compared to a network latency of the application load balancer of 543 milliseconds. So this is a latency reduction by around 30%. Yeah. So just by using adding the global accelerator to the infrastructure, so adding that in front of the application load balancer, you can reduce the network latency to your infrastructure.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I think I read a few articles about how internet routing works and that like most often they, like if you send a package to some other point in the internet, then they basically choose the path based on what is cheapest for them. And I think if you go with the global accelerator, then you're basically on the, not on the cheapest path, you're most likely on the most expensive path because that's how they can decrease the latency here. And I think they also can keep the latency very stable. So I'm not sure if you measured something like this, but do you also have numbers about the variance of the latency or something like this?
I haven't had a look into that. Basically, I should probably do that. The data is still around. So I measured 10,000 measurements. So that's maybe something we can calculate from that measurements as well, but I haven't done so yet. Yeah, but that's basically an interesting question. Okay, so but that was the network latency just from all network endpoints accumulated. And then the question is also, what is the latency reduction from different parts of the world to our endpoint? Remember, that is the application load balancer in EOVEST 1, so that's in Ireland. So I have some numbers as well for example, the network latency reduction from Africa to our endpoint by using the global accelerator, or from North America, where it is 40%, for example. So the latency reduction is different from the different continents in the world, just probably based on the optimization in the routing here. And of course, the benefit of using the global accelerator is very low when you send your requests from Europe, right? Because if the distance is already very short and there are not that many hops from the client to the application load balancer, the improvement is of course not that much. So it's paying off if you have a global audience connecting to your endpoint.
Okay, so I have a few questions in mind, and I will start with the first one, and then there will be more questions. So this is, I think that the result is very interesting. But the question is, what's the cost associated to this improvement? So what's the pricing model of Global Accelerator? So can you go into details here a little bit?
The pricing of the AWS Global Accelerator is quite complicated. So first of all, when creating an accelerator, so that is creating those two static Anycast IP addresses, you pay around $20 per month for that. So that is the static fee, the fixed fee that we are paying. And then there is a data transfer premium that you pay for the traffic that goes through the Global Accelerator. And that is, or the price for that depends on the source and the destination of the traffic. So it's not that simple to calculate in advance if you don't have that numbers. Where's the traffic coming from? How much traffic do we receive from which part of the world? That's basically the interesting thing that you need to know here. And for this data transfer premium, it is about 1 to 5 cents per gigabyte, so of traffic. So that is roughly the range that you pay for. And it gets even more complicated because usually with AWS, we only pay for outgoing traffic, right? So that is basically what all the traffic is priced on. But with the Global Accelerator, you're paying either for the outgoing traffic or for the incoming traffic, depending on which is more. So if you have a more outgoing traffic than incoming traffic, you just pay for the outgoing traffic. And if you have more incoming traffic than outgoing traffic, you're paying for the incoming traffic. So that is how the traffic pricing works for the Global Accelerator. And also what you need to have in mind is, so you're not only paying the data transfer with Global Accelerator, you also pay the usual traffic price for the traffic, for example, going through the application load balancer and leaving your VPC in EU West 1 in my example.
Okay, so this seems to be quite complicated. But I have a second question, and I already mentioned CloudFront when you asked me about the alternatives. So I still think that CloudFront could do or is kind of a similar service, because I think CloudFront is also about getting the data into the AWS network as soon as possible. And I mean, CloudFront does a lot of other things. It does caching, for example, which I think Global Accelerator does not. So can you go a little bit into the details about how Global Accelerator differs from CloudFront to make this a little bit more clearer here?
So I think CloudFront and Global Accelerator are similar in some use cases. So let's talk about that. So when you want to optimize the latency and the response times of your application, then you could also use CloudFront instead of the Global Accelerator. And I also did some benchmarks comparing Global Accelerator and CloudFront, so the latency between those two services. So same test setup, again, the application load balancer in EU West 1, and then Global Accelerator in front of that, and also CloudFront distribution in front of that. And the results are quite interesting, I think, because, so let's compare a few numbers. So for example, for traffic that is coming from Africa, the Global Accelerator latency to the first byte is around 360 milliseconds. And from CloudFront, it's only 50 milliseconds. Or let's compare traffic from North America to our load balancer in EU West 1 through the Global Accelerator. The time to first byte is 180 milliseconds, and from CloudFront, it is only 80 milliseconds. So where does that difference come from? It comes from the fact that CloudFront is acting as a cache. So CloudFront caches the response from the application load balancer and serves that from the edge locations worldwide. So the client only has to connect to the edge and not to the application load balancer behind that. So that is the main difference. Global Accelerator forwards every package to your load balancer. And with CloudFront, the edge location is only forwarding your request to your application load balancer in this example when needed, which means when the response is not yet cached. So yeah, that is the difference between CloudFront and the Global Accelerator.
Okay, I see. So I think it was also kind of a advice from AWS to use CloudFront with caching disabled if latency is important, to just make sure that we are entering the AWS backbone as soon as possible. So do you also have like numbers in this regard? So if we use CloudFront only as a like entry point into our system, but without the caching, because I think if the content is cached, I mean, it's kind of a, it's not really fair to compare Global Accelerator with CloudFront because it's not really Global Accelerator's problem.
Yeah, so I did that as well. So I compared the Global Accelerator to CloudFront where I disabled caching completely. So this is from that perspective a more fair comparison. And then the numbers change. In summary, Global Accelerator has lower latencies than CloudFront with caching disabled. So to give you an example, Global Accelerator time to first byte to application load balancer is 180 milliseconds, and to CloudFront with caching disabled, it was around 370 milliseconds. So that is almost twice the latency compared to using the Global Accelerator. And why is that? So it makes sense, of course, because CloudFront at the edge location has to process the incoming HTTP request, and then, if it's not in the cache, sends that HTTP request to the application load balancer, to your backends. So of course that adds latency because there is some processing happening there. And the Global Accelerator on the other side just acts on IP level. It just routes the packages to the application load balancer. So that has much less latency, of course. So that makes definitely sense. Okay, so then maybe let's talk about when should you use CloudFront and when should you use the Global Accelerator? And one thing that is important maybe is that CloudFront only supports HTTP or HTTPS. So whenever you have any other protocol, any TCP-based or even UDP-based protocol, CloudFront is not an option. Then you have to use Global Accelerator. You should use CloudFront, in my opinion, if you have a read-intensive workload. So which means if you have an HTTP-based application and you have many read requests compared to the number of write requests, and also the majority of the responses can be cached. Yeah, so that is what we have from these numbers. So if CloudFront can cache responses from your application, then the performance improvements, the latency improvements are significant compared to using the Global Accelerator. And there's one other thing that could be an argument for not using CloudFront. So if you have to comply with a data protection law that says that you have to don't have to process data outside of a specific region, then CloudFront might not be an option because it's a global network, a global content delivery network that processes each HTTPS request on the edge locations. And you cannot really restrict it to specific regions. You can restrict it to some regions based on pricing. But for example, it's not possible to restrict CloudFront to only process data within the European Union. So this might be an argument for not using CloudFront if you have to make sure that data is not processed unencrypted outside of a specific region in the world.
Okay, so one question just to make sure that I get this right. So when you talk about a read-intensive workload, so do you mean a workload with a lot of like GET requests that are cacheable, or what do you mean by read-intensive?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean with that. So if you have something that this, if you have something that only writes data, then using CloudFront does not really help compared to using Global Accelerator, because you cannot cache anything. So basically the thing is, can you cache the majority of requests that are coming through? And so what are then options, or why should you use Global Accelerator and not CloudFront? Yeah, so we discussed some limitations of CloudFront already. And on top of that, if you want to do fast, reliable, multi-region disaster recovery that does not rely on DNS, then Global Accelerator is a better choice, because CloudFront does not offer that. And also another option is, if you want to have a private endpoint, for example, in your VPC, an internal application load balancer in your VPC, and you want to make that publicly available, then also using Global Accelerator is a good choice, because with CloudFront, you always need a public endpoint. So you need an endpoint that is available from the whole internet to work with CloudFront. You can restrict it in theory to the IP address ranges of CloudFront, but yeah, you share them with all the other AWS customers. So it's not really a strict network restriction on that. So if you really want to make sure that all the traffic flows to Global Accelerator and only through these endpoints are available publicly, then this is also an argument for using the Global Accelerator.
Okay, so just to summarize the last point. So you say that if I have an application load balancer in a private subnet or in private subnets, or if I have an EC2 instance in a private subnet, I could make this thing public by using Global Accelerator, and it's still ensured that I can only access it from the public via Global Accelerator, right?
Exactly. So that is a feature of the Global Accelerator. So you can use it with EC2 instances and application load balancers in private networks, in private subnets. So this also is an interesting fact, because I always learned and also teached that the resource running in a private subnet is never reachable from the internet. And that is actually not true. So because with a Global Accelerator, you can make a resource, an application load balancer, or an EC2 instance running in a private subnet without a public IP address publicly available through the Global Accelerator. And the only check that AWS has in place here is that they check that the VPC of the private subnet has an internet gateway attached. So mm-hmm. That might surprise some people. So if you really want to make sure, for example, with IAM policies, that people cannot accidentally make an endpoint publicly available, you should also check that they cannot create a Global Accelerator or have some controls in place that check for that.
Okay, so that's an interesting fact. So I wasn't aware of this, and it's definitely interesting from a security perspective. Okay, so very interesting. So I think so far we had a lot of good things to say about Global Accelerator. So this is a review, Andreas. So have you figured out anything that's not working as expected? Well, that is maybe limiting us in using it. So can you go a little bit into the details here as well?
Yes. So I think the most missing feature that I found is that there is no CloudFormation support. And that is not a problem only with a Global Accelerator, and I can rant on that for hours. But yeah, Global Accelerator is one of the newish services where we still don't have CloudFormation support, which is very frustrating if you do infrastructure as code. And as usual, Terraform already supports Global Accelerator. Yeah, so I think that is really frustrating.
Okay, that's interesting, because I think, so I'm not sure, but I think the customers that are using Global Accelerator are, so I expect that those are customers that are really sophisticated, have sophisticated deployments. So I wouldn't expect them to do it manually using the console. So that's okay, interesting. So Okay, what else is missing?
So I think the other thing that came to my mind is there are not a lot of integrations with other AWS services available yet. So Global Accelerator is basically a very isolated service. So it does very well, as we discussed, what it's intended to be, but it does not really integrate with a lot of other services. So one thing I can think of specifically is, as we can use Global Accelerator to shift traffic transparently for the client to different endpoints, this would be a perfect fit for integrating that into, for example, code pipeline, code deploy, services that actually can make use of such a blue-green deployment mechanism. So I think that is definitely missing and probably on the roadmap, but has not yet been delivered. And also there are some limits when using the Global Accelerator. So at the moment, for example, the idle timeout for TCP connections is 90 seconds and for UDP connections is 30 seconds. So that is something you have to keep in mind depending on your applications. And then also the service limits, you can have 20 accelerators per AWS accounts. So that means you get 2 times 20 static Anycast IP addresses. You can configure 10 listeners per accelerator and 10 endpoints per endpoint group. Yeah. So if you do if you think about using the Global Accelerator, you should check with that limits and if they match with the architecture that you have in mind. Okay, and then as always, when doing our reviews of AWS services, I also gathered the information for our service maturity table. So the service maturity table is intended to show you very quickly the maturity of a service that AWS announced, and in this case, it's around a year that this service is around. And I'm just checking different criteria, and we're giving them a score between 0 and 10, which means 10 is the best, and we then calculate the total maturity score out of that. And a few important things here. So we already discussed missing CloudFormation support. There's no support for CloudWatch events yet. And there is no integration with AWS Config for compliance, which is really missing because of the fact that you can use the Global Accelerator to add public endpoints to your infrastructure. So I think that's definitely something that should be integrated into AWS Config so that you can have your compliance rules checking for that as well. So that is the things that are missing. And the things that are in place that are really good from a maturity point of view is there is an SLA for a Global Accelerator. That is great. CloudTrail is integrated. The IAM or the possibility to write IAM policies is great. And it also supports tagging for grouping and billing already. So that is on the plus side. So overall, I've calculated a service maturity score of 6, which I think is quite fine for a service that has been around for a year. And also, you can see from the track record that the team behind the Global Accelerator is shipping new features regularly. So just last week, they announced support for new region endpoints. And yeah, so they are actually actively working on that. So that is great.
Okay. And I also think because of it's unusual for services that are only 1 year old that they have such good coverage of things like tagging and IAM and things like this. So I think this is a quite... So for the, like, taking into account that it's only 1 year, or basically it gets like the first anniversary is basically next month. So that is pretty mature already, taking into account that it's only 11 months old service. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, then maybe let me summarize. So the global accelerator actually optimizes the network latency significant. And maybe even more interesting, you can use it for multi-region architectures, especially if you want to rely on very short times for disaster recovery between regions, because you don't have to rely on DNS. So in these scenarios, using global accelerator is great. On the other hand, I think that for many, many applications, CloudFront is maybe the more interesting option, because, or at least whenever you have an application that can, where you can use caching, then CloudFront is definitely more interesting, because you can cache the responses on the edge. So I think that is also the reason why I haven't used Global Accelerator yet, but using CloudFront a lot, because that caching mechanism is really helpful.
Okay, Andrea, so thank you very, very much for preparing this review. So I know it's a lot of work to get something like this done, also with your latency benchmark and stuff like this. So this was really I think it took some time for you to prepare it. So thank you very much. And I'm also looking forward to my first project where I use it, because as you said, we do a lot of e-commerce stuff, and their CloudFront is the option, because caching is really important. So I'm really interested in some other use cases where we could use it. Okay, so besides Global Accelerator, so let us kind of finish this episode. So a few like housekeeping information and stuff like this from our side to our listeners. So one thing that is important to us, and also if you're interested in getting all the episodes, because we release one every 2 weeks, is that you subscribe to this podcast in your favorite app that you use to listen to podcasts. So if you search for Cloud On Out in your podcast listener, you should be able to find it, and then you can also subscribe to the podcast. And the big benefit is that you get access to the newest episodes as soon as they are released. So that's an interesting, I think, approach to get automatically the newest episodes to your listener. And also, if you are listening our podcast on Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate if you could rate our show. And besides that, if you are or if you have feedback for us, feel free to send us an email, and also you can contact us on Twitter. So anything else, Andreas, that you want to mention here?
Yeah, so one more thing. So we published our book Rapid Docker on AWS recently, and you should definitely check out this book if you're looking for a way to deploy your application on AWS, because we provide a production-ready and very fast-to-implement architecture based on ECS, Fargate, the application load balancer, and Aurora Serverless. So you could even add, that's quite cool, you could even add Global Accelerator in front of that, right? Because we are using application load balancer here. And so that is the architecture that is described in the book. You will also find a lot of source code examples for the infrastructure as code in the book, for PHP, for Python, for Java, for Node.js and Ruby. And the main topics of the book are, so we are describing this highly available, scalable and cost-effective architecture. You learn how to Dockerize your web application. You learn how to operate the building blocks, so how to monitor, how to debug problems, how to deploy. And in the last part of the book, you set up a continuous deployment pipeline with code build as well. So that is all packed into a book, really to the point, around 120 pages. So you should definitely check it out. You will find a link to the book in the show notes. And that's it for this week. So thanks a lot for listening, and listen to you in, or speak to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, thank you very much. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.